So the project is zooming into the weight setting of the database of the Werkplaats Immaterieel Erfgoed, an organization based in Brussels that deals with intangible heritage. And this is a very subtle function that is basically taking a number and determining based on that what is the order of the elements in which they will be displayed on the website. As I got to know the organization better, I realized that a lot of the work that they do is interpersonal. It implies working with people, but it also means that that work happens behind the scenes, let's say, and this is not so visible in the database itself. And the more I spoke to people who work at the Werkplaats Immaterieel Erfgoed, I became very interested in the position of the moderator of the database as a key person in this work, in the work of mediating the database with the communities that are safeguarding intangible heritage, the elements, and other organizations that revolve around. And so the work itself, I would say, is trying to bring to the forefront this type of invisible labor that happens. I guess the subjectivity that goes into it is taken for granted, I would say. But so it's trying to bring this work that happens in the background into the forefront. Mm-hmm. And all the while this parading the elements in front of the viewer, let's say. Mm-hmm. And the viewer can choose to interact with this order, and as a result of their labor, is able to hear an interview with the moderator.
Could you somehow differentiate the first version from the second version?
Yes, the first version, I think, was. I think the two are, in the sense of what the topics they approach, the two are not so different from one another. But I guess that what has shifted is the active or passive role of the, in this case, visitor, which in the previous version, the emphasis was solely on the details of the work of the moderator, whereas I think now that has shifted slightly, and there is more, even though this figure is still very present, the visitor is also more, has the capacity to intervene with the content.
Mm-hmm.
And I think also the fact that we've gone from the physical environment to a digital environment has been quite an interesting shift, because for example, the being part also of the scenography in the previous edition, that meant that all of these elements could be somehow implemented into the presentation of the work.
Mm-hmm.
Here I find that it's a bit more self-standing, and of course it's not self-standing because it talks to all of the different pieces that are in the exhibition, but putting it together has felt a lot more like.
You mean like that in the online exhibition, it feels like there's more separation between the works.
Yes. Yeah.
Mm.
In a sense, perhaps. Well, no, at least between my work and the rest of the works, I'm not sure what the impressions of the other artists were, and I'm very curious to find out. But I did feel like I had a lot more. I didn't necessarily had to merge into the space, which I found was an interesting experience to have. I think that's always a bit the problem, though, with the digital environment, is that the context is a bit more invisible sometimes.
What we felt was super interesting with your work is the intention of carefully sort of investigating a process.
Yes, I think that also starts from the fact that perhaps I was not very familiar with the term intangible heritage. through the process of getting to know the organization and getting to know how they operate. And they do so on many different levels. They operate on the civic ground, but also they have to interact with the Flemish government, and also the, there are all these layers that add up, which I found really interesting while to discover while let's say digging deeper. Like the constraints under which they have to work become visible after a while, I think. Or I'm using the word visible. the constraints that they have to respond to and adapt to take a while to notice, but I think they are also very important. And I think this is also where the materiality of the database plays a role, for example. In this particular instance, the fact that the database was started by the Flemish government and they had physical ownership over the server, let's say, or they were paying for these services, also determined a lot in terms of setting the framework in which the Werkplätze Materiel Erfgut was working. Yeah, and that created also different scales of working, different urgencies, different types of negotiation had to happen in order for the goals of both of these two intangible heritage guarding bodies to fulfill their goals.
Maybe this is the moment to ask the question we have been preparing. I don't know if you've it, but that we were realizing the different, differently positioned types of caretaking you were making emerge in the work, like different positions and with different intentions and interests, because it seems like the sort of caretaking task that the Werkplatz itself has is not necessarily the same as the caretaking that the different groups want to want and can operate with. So maybe could you say a bit more about this?
Yeah, I guess that as I started looking into closer into this database, I also you start very soon to realize there are some particularities. Which is the fact that it is people-oriented. In almost every picture in this collection, there is a person. And I think that also points towards the position of the moderator that they have in liaising between not only these official governmental bodies, but also communities of practice. I was also quite surprised to realize that in order for the intangible heritage of a specific region to be acknowledged, there needs to be an inventory. It's an obligation to have that was set in the 2003 Intangible Cultural Heritage Convention. And this brings with itself a very interesting set of questions that revolve perhaps, for example, in around Western-style intellectual property regimes, because, of course, by adding an element to the database, it becomes a sort of intellectual property. And you start noticing the effects of this when, at a perhaps larger scale, there are conflicts between the intangible current cultural organizations of different countries that are claiming the same kind of knowledge. And there's many examples of this, actually. But it kind of also goes to show that these traditions don't really stop at the borders. And this brings me back, perhaps, to the many types of inventories that coexist in the same database. And well, many. There's two. There's the official Flanders database, and these are the items that were acknowledged or that underwent a certain process of safeguarding and maintenance in order to be acknowledged by the Flemish government as intangible heritage. And this process is a lot more bureaucratic, and it's more complex. It takes more time and perhaps self-education on these questions. And then there is the WIE, the Werkplatzmaterial Erfgut database, or the collection, which has been trying to be more accessible. So they have also different levels of entry between each other, while at the same time existing in the same location, the same inventory of items. So I think there's around 150 items in total. I'm not giving precise numbers, but around 60 are Flemish inventory, and even less are part of the UNESCO collection. Yeah, and maybe I'm repeating myself a little bit, but then I think the figure of the moderator really comes in as the point around which all of these different dynamics revolve somehow. Yeah.
Is there a hierarchy between the different inventories? Like is it like a step up the ladder if you make it from the local to the international?
I guess there is a different availability of funds. But yeah, there is a hierarchy there. I think the end goal, for at least the point of view of the Flemish government, is to have as many items in the UNESCO collection. To be fair, I think that it is part of establishing a sort of hierarchy that relies on cultural knowledge production as a system of validation. I suppose there is an encouragement to try to continue applying to go higher and higher. But I think from the point of view of the volunteers who safeguard this heritage, I am not entirely sure what if there is a hierarchy.
Because also, there's a kind of tension between cascade up to the global somehow. Like at the one hand, the extreme care for specificity and situatedness, and on the other hand, a drive to generalize and make available worldwide somehow.
Yeah, and in a sense, I think the figure of the caretakers or safeguarding agents is also quite interesting because it distributes the caretaking, so that not only the organization and not only the moderators are responsible for the maintenance and the transmission of knowledge, but that this task is passed on to volunteers who take on this, who identify themselves as connected to this heritage. And then take on the tasks of promoting it, finding new networks of people around it, passing on the knowledge, and so on.
There's a question that came from the conversation with Michael and Nicola.
So what does the interview generate as a practice? And what does it mean to take distance from the interviews? What is being abandoned? What's being left behind?
So they were like referring to the meeting we had where you had reported that you were stepping back from the interviews. And this had really triggered Nicola, I think, in thinking about what does it mean to step back from the interviews and what does the interview practice mean for you?
Yeah, I actually did not really mean to step away from the interview itself, but instead I felt that through the process of getting to know the operational means of this group, I came closer and closer to them. And while it is not that I want to impose a distance, but for this particular new version of the work, I wanted to explore a bit how it would be to take some steps back, because in the first round it was actually quite difficult for me to choose a specific focus point, because there were so many interesting questions that came up and so many loose threads that were left behind, that it took me quite a while to select one and to follow it. I guess what I meant with the distance was I don't think there's necessarily a distance, because the voice of the moderator is still there, the interview is still there, but perhaps the shift of focus is on other elements in the work, such as intervening in this order and having an agency in rearranging it and moving the inventory around.
But maybe part of this question was also to maybe inquire about the practice of interviewing.
Mm-hmm. I really enjoyed it as a way to make present the moderator and to not paraphrase their words. And instead to, of course, there was still the dialogue that happened and the questions that were asked in relation to the piece. But I think it was nice to give a sense of, you know, to have the materiality of her voice present in the installation. And actually, a lot of things were tied together through this interview, which before were not so clear to me. And I think by doing this, but of course you have these different moments where some things are on record, some things are off record, and there's still a sense of mediation at the end. I guess for me the most important part was to have this the person present somehow in the installation.
And this play with on and off record, now listening to you, seems really like a continuity in your research into this database, no? Like some things that remain opaque, some things that might offer different agencies once rendered transparent, other things that cannot or should not. Like, how are you thinking about, like, if we go back to the ambitions of a project like Divergence to test out the possibility of decolonial and intersectional practices in the digital, in online collections.
Mm.
There's something you seem to be saying about on and off record.
In this case, I think being off record is another form of caretaking.
Yes.
There is, of course, also this balance of, or a responsibility of representation of this organization, and the sort of internal dynamics that they have, internal and external dynamics that are the forces of their work. I know that sometimes there were certain things that were not necessarily comfortable to be said out loud, and so they remained in the offline sphere, whereas, and I still think that the interview that resulted was actually quite, I mean, it was honest and it was reflecting on a lot of these topics quite deeply that we had been talking about. And it provides a lot of very generous insight into their practice. But I think through the things that were not, where it was not possible to include them, were exactly where these constraints that I mentioned before became visible. By that I mean the conditions under which they work and the sort of interdependency between different types of organizations. These conditions became more apparent. The interview, let's say. Actually, I forgot to mention this, but that was for me also the reason I chose this title, The Weight of Things. Of course, it's contrast with the name Immaterial Heritage or Intangible Heritage. But I think all of these relations between people and objects, between nature and people, etc., they have a certain gravity,
which is something else than because it's a different connection to the material than, for example, the project of Phil and Mia, I would say, no? Because you speak about gravity rather than physicality or materiality.
Yes, I guess there were, of course, in this process, a few elements that for me felt more heavy than others. And I struggled a bit in terms of how to still be able to reflect on them while not losing sight of the entire collection. But these particular elements that I'm thinking of are, of course, elements of intangible heritage that, where there is not always a lot of agreement in terms of how to refer to them, in terms of who is their caretaker, in terms of what meaning they have, what to the Flemish society, I guess. I mean, for example, I'm thinking more specifically of a few items that are showing certain dynamics, like, for example, the coffee making practices. There's many such practices in Flanders. And I think, for example, the aim of the WIE is to represent this variety, this multitude of approaches. Whereas a database like the Flemish Inventory is focusing on merging all of the different standpoints into one viewpoint, one text, one consensus. And I think already this difference in approach is very important, and it reveals more things. But there are also other elements that have caused a lot of discussion that I would give certain weight to. So the cutting of the tail of certain horses is a subject that is quite debated in terms of it being animal cruelty. There is, of course, the whole Sinterklaas tradition, which has very difficult racist heritage, you know. Or even if you look at the Als Carnival, there's a lot of such elements that there need to be different kinds of conversations happening.
So I was struck by this contrast between the way you make the move between material and immaterial, and somehow seem to bring up the way that the immaterial has consequences for the material. And so this bringing up of weight and gravity and heaviness is somehow pointing at the fact that these kinds of conversations, these kinds of inventories and databases actually matter for the way we live in the world. Would you agree?
Yes, absolutely. No, absolutely. And that was also the reason why I chose the title, The Weight of Things. There is definitely a connection between the material and immaterial that I'm interested to explore. This piece with the interview, with zooming into different elements and their stories, what histories they have, what power dynamics they produce, and at what levels as well, because there are, of course, interpersonal power dynamics, but there's also power dynamics between nation states that become mediated through these objects, let's say.
Yes. Yeah. It's complex, of course, how these things work on each other.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Could you maybe ask a question to Anaïs? On her work? No, on the Wikify Colonial Botanic.
I know that she's not working with a tree as a classification system per se, but I am wondering whether dealing with these topics and the complexities that arise while doing so influenced her perception of this metaphor that exists in data structures. And whether while doing this research, she encountered any other mutations or forms that could be implemented or that could perhaps be a replacement for the tree as a data structure, that which has this hierarchy in it.
So just to rephrase, so, yeah. It's like the relation between a tree as a material, like as an entity, as a species, and tree as a data structure.
Yes. Because I think also the metaphor of the tree as a data structure is equally imbued with these colonial legacies of classification systems. Or at least this is my assumption. Mm-hmm. But I'm curious to hear whether whether some of her discoveries can connect to that or not.